Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey, everyone, and thank you for joining us, and welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast. We appreciate your support and have a special interview and episode for you today. So sit back, relax, and enjoy learning about sports and opportunities around the world. Here comes the music. I gotta let you go.
He goes, I'll give you $750,000 a year to sign with us.
Without right even now, showing off.
He goes, don't even walk over to the field.
Because I had no idea that my passport was even expired.
Let me tell you, I sent out 6,000 emails.
Gentlemen, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us, as athletes, were taught how to use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, Jay, get me out.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over it.
You finished the game with a broken hand?
Yeah, I finished the game with...
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
There are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey my last season.
Okay. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast. You have made it to episode 50. Before we go any farther, thank you all for all you listeners and all of you who have supported us on other platforms, social media. Maybe you're liking, following us on social media, sharing our show with friends, rating and reviewing us, passing us on in a variety of different ways. Thank you all for that. Because of you that we're able to do this and that we're able to expand in some other ways that we'll talk about next week, which we're very excited about. But I had to take a step. I had to thank you all for the support. I had to thank you all for getting us as far as we've gotten. And we look forward to the next 50 and the next 50 after that. This is in no way an end. It's a step to keep going, and we've continued to see growth, so we thank you all for that. That being said, if you've enjoyed the show and you haven't passed it on, I would encourage you to do so. We want to reach as many people as possible, and word of mouth so far is still the best way to do it. So if you like the show, we'd appreciate the continued support and the continued sharing of it, be it through social media or word of mouth. Just a quick reflect here. We've obviously, this is episode 50. We've done 49 other episodes. We've talked basketball, both men and women's, soccer, both men and women's. We've talked Olympics, more regional competitions. We've talked baseball. We've talked country dissections when we looked at just sports in Australia. We've done volleyball, men and women's. We've done just a massive variety of episodes and content throughout the past. So if this is your first time listening, maybe go ahead and check out that catalog of different episodes. And you'll hopefully be surprised with all the different content, all the different topics that are out there. And whether you're maybe interested in a certain sport or sports in general, hopefully you'll find what you're looking for. If you don't find what you're looking for, send us a message and we'd love to add it in some way in some future episode. Now, for this episode, we're joined with Richie Burke, who is the head coach for the Washington Spirit, which is a soccer club in the NWSL, National Women's Soccer League. In the interview, we talk a lot of different topics, including different markets, how different markets have done. Richie's very clear that he can't necessarily speak on behalf of other markets, which is fair and understandable, but we do get into it a little bit, which is great. It brings up a topic that we didn't necessarily reach a conclusion during the interview, again, partially because Richie can't necessarily speak for other markets wholeheartedly, which is understandable. But that question is, how does an NWSL team do in a market where there's already an MLS team, or there will be an MLS team? Regardless of who got there first, how does an NWSL team do when there is what you might call a split market, when there's two professional soccer teams? Is there room for two professional soccer teams in a market in the United States, be it men's or women's? Is there room for two in one market? And so he is able to speak on it a little bit because he's in Washington, where we have DC United, and we have the Washington Spirit, two professional soccer clubs, one men's, one women's, in that same market of Washington, D.C. But there are other ones. There are plenty of other ones, and some of them have done well, and some of them maybe not so well. And I want to dive in more to that. So if you have any insight listening to this, let us know. We'd love to talk about it more on the show. How does it affect one or both of the teams when there is a split market? Are you better off as an NWSL team or just in general a team when you have a market all to yourself? Does it work to have two? Maybe you can work together and figure things out kind of more as a team, or is it better to be by yourself? So that's a conversation we had. We weren't really able to nail down a final answer, but you're definitely going to get some insight into that. Now, speaking of those markets, if you go just a quick search of the NWSL website, there's 9 teams uplisted. You have the Chicago Red Stars, Houston Dash, North Carolina Courage, OL Reign, which is a squad out in Tacoma, Washington, Orlando Pride, Portland Thorns, Sky Blue, which is a squad out in Harrison, New Jersey, the Utah Royals, and the Washington Spirit. So those are the teams we currently have in the NWSL, at least according to the website, looking at it right now. But we do have talk in the interview with Richie about potential future teams, because we compared it to how the MLS, and I'm not an expert in the MLS at all, but they have these scheduled expansions that we talk about, or at least briefly mentioned in the episode. And I wanted to see if NWSL has that same thing. I actually know of one that I heard of when following them a little bit, but we do talk about the future expansion or potential future expansion of the NWSL. And then, you know, finally, for some of you, you may not be aware of what was around before the NWSL. Again, not an expert, but there was a professional women's team. There's actually a really good ESPN 30 for 30 podcast version of this story talking about the WUSA, which was a former women's professional soccer league that folded in 2003 after 3 years of playing. And so that's one you might be, if after listening to this episode, you might go, wow, I want to learn more about the WUSA. There's a great ESPN 30 for 30 podcast documentary on it. So you have to find ESPN 30 for 30 podcast, but there's a great one on that. It's very interesting, things I knew nothing about. And it also kind of breaks down this relationship between women's professional soccer and U.S. soccer. It's kind of a murky water that I don't fully understand. Maybe some of you have a better idea on it, but there is an interesting relationship between U.S. soccer, MLS, and at that time, WUSA. That's something you should dive into if you're at all interested. I can't speak anymore on it because I don't know anything about it, really. I just know that when I was listening to the podcast, I thought, I've never thought of that before. That's basically the interview. We do talk pay a little bit, and it brings up an interesting discussion that I have not considered before when it comes to pay for women's professional soccer specifically. So enjoy the interview with Richie Burke, head coach of the Washington Spirit. But before that, a couple of quick reminders on where you can find more about the Globally Ballin podcast and more of the projects we've done. First, the website, best place to go. www.globallyballin.com. That is where you will find everything that you need and everything that you don't need. Everything is there, www.globallyballin.com. In addition, social media, you can find us at facebook.com/globallyballin. If you're in the Southeast Asia area, we actually have another page, facebook.com/globallyballin SEA for Southeast Asia. You can find us at Twitter at globallyballin, at Instagram at globallyballinofficial. And finally, you can find us at patreon.com/globallyballin. A quick note for the Patreon page, there's just a ton of things on there, from extra content, early content, ad-free content, to people looking to potentially sponsor and set up advertisements on the show. There's different tiers that might be perfect for you. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on wherever you listen. A rating and a review would be very much appreciated and help us grow and help us expand the show to all reaches of the world, getting more stories and more insight for all of you as much as possible. If you have any suggestions for the show, critiques or anything, people maybe you want to hear from on the show, a sport you want represented, a country or whatever it is, send us a message on any of those platforms. That's the best way to get a hold of us. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever you want. Those are the best ways to get your suggestions to us so we can try to customize these episodes for you, the listener, as best as possible. That being said, enjoy the show and the interview. Hi, Richie. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Thanks for joining us. All right. So to start off, we'll just have you introduce who you are and what you do.
My name's Richie Burke. I'm the head coach of the Washington Spirit of the National Women's Soccer League.
Okay. So when did you get your start as far as being a coach in the WSL or NWSL?
I came on board at the Washington Spirit last year.
So as of right now, where is the NWSL as far as getting ready for the next season, being out from COVID-19 and everything like that?
We are attending a mini tournament in Salt Lake City, Utah, starting 27th of June. And all nine teams will be in attendance, sequestered in hotels and in a NWSL village. So it's a containment pool. And games will be played in a round-robin four-game basis. The best eight teams advance into the knockout stage. And there'll be a quarterfinal, semifinal, and final.
So to give young women an idea of soccer opportunities in the United States, what professional opportunities are there right now? Is it just the NWSL?
In the United States of America, yes, that's the only professional league in this country.
And what was here before then?
Well, there was a couple of different leagues. The WSL was here for a while and didn't quite make it. And they've had a couple of regional leagues that have been sort of semi-professional. But this is the follow-on from the WSA, Women's United Soccer Association. So those teams, some of them managed to continue to exist and morphed into a different side. And that's more or less the precursor to the current NWSL.
So we've seen leagues fail and succeed in both men's and women's in all sports, all countries, all over the world. But when we specifically look at women's soccer in the United States, one of the first things that does come to mind to anyone who is a little bit familiar is the WUSA, which only lasted a few years. What does the NWSL do that you think might be different and will be able to help them succeed and make it long term?
Well, I'm sure people at the NWSL are asking themselves the very same question. There's been a couple of conversations about U.S. soccer's managing partnership role involved in that, which then allows for players under national team contracts to play in a domestic league, which is an interesting piece for the U.S. soccer people and for Vlatko Andonovski, who's a former coach in this league and is now the national team coach. He houses his players in a very strong domestic league, which is filled with most of the best players in the world. So that role and that capacity for U.S. soccer to continue to house the national team players and give them ongoing matches outside of the international games is probably a huge piece of this. Whether or not U.S. soccer decide to remove themselves as management partners or they elect to not have national team players on U.S. soccer contracts and have them now go back to their home clubs and have the home clubs pay for them, I'm not quite sure how that's going to manifest itself. I would say it'll be a very interesting punt for the entire league if that was in fact what U.S. soccer decided to do and perhaps help fund the league without being necessarily a managing partner, which MLS has managed to do without having U.S. soccer really oversee their operation and be in that managing partnership role. So, you know, I think there are some interesting people in ownership roles. I think there is a new breed at the NWSL league office. And the new commissioner, Lisa Bird, seems like she's very forward-thinking and very progressive in what she wants to do with this league. I hope that it continues to grow. There's a conversation about two, maybe three new franchises coming into this league shortly, and I hope that that's the case.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question here, because MLS has these scheduled expansion teams that are going to be coming out here in the next couple of years, and as time continues to go on, I mean, they have one set up in Austin and Sacramento and St. Louis. And so they're ready. They have these in line ready to keep going. Is there anything like that at least out in the public of the NWSL yet?
You know, Louisville have indicated that they'll be coming in most certainly in 2021. There's also the promise of one or two other franchises in the wings, whether they are coming in 2021 or 2022 is, you know, is a matter for debate still. I hope that they are going to join this league. There's plenty of players. It's a little bit ironic for me that we have a draft where, you know, you can get 200 players drafted. 200 players enter into a draft and you can only draft 40 out of them. So that those other, you know, 160, where do they go? They end up going to play in Europe most of the time, or some top players are lost to the game. So the fact that we don't have more of a scope to give players coming out of college or players even from the youth game to move into the professional ranks is a little bit disconcerting, because I think there's a lot of really good talented players miss out from playing in this league.
So absolutely, you know, you don't want to lose those players, and especially if there's good ones, you want to make sure they have an opportunity. But on the flip side, I mean, the economics has got to be there, right? You got to be selling tickets in order to make money, in order to make these leagues work in the first place. So from your experience as a head coach, are the majority of these teams bringing people in to watch?
You know, you go and play in Portland, they have an incredible spectator base. They, you know, 20,000-25,000 people can watch them play on a regular basis.
Wow.
And that's, it's a great place to go and play. I'm not a big fan of synthetic grass, but, you know, the atmosphere in that stadium and how they set up, I think they're a great group of fans, and they support that club very, very well, both on the men's side and the women's side. So, you know, Portland has done it right. Some of the teams are increasing their fan base. We managed to get 20,000 people in Audi Field for two matches last season, and we're really on an upward trend with our supporter base and the interest in the league. COVID-19 did us absolutely no favors whatsoever on that front. But I think there are other markets that are looking to grow and increase their fan base too. I think New York moving into Red Bull Stadium, New Jersey Sky Blue moving into Red Bull Stadium is going to be an interesting one. I think they would certainly have increased their fan base. Clubs like Orlando and Houston, who are attached directly to MLS clubs, a bit like Portland, they've not done as well in attracting a larger fan base. It's a loyal fan base, a small but loyal fan base, definitely. And I'm sure, speaking to both of those two coaches, they would love to have more people coming through the gates and making them much more economically viable for their ownership groups. But you know, they're attached to a larger organism with an MLS club, so that's an interesting one. Carolina, who are the best team in our league, and best coached and well organized team in our league, they've got a consistent fan base, but I'm sure Paul Riley and that franchise would like to have more people coming through the turnstiles as well. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I think Olympic Lyon buying out Seattle and looking to maybe move into a new stadium is a progressive move for the entire league. And you know, if the women's team in Seattle can muster as much support as the men's team out there, then I think they'll have one to watch as well.
We actually had this conversation in an episode way back when the young lady played professional soccer overseas, and we were talking about the NWSL and the MLS and how do they match together in a city. So I wanted to, you kind of touched on it, that's why I want to go there, is when you look at these different teams, do you typically see a city that welcomes both teams, or is it almost like we only really have room for one professional team, be it men's or women's, in a city for soccer?
No, I'm not qualified to comment on other people's markets. You know, I can comment about the market we share with DC United.
Sure.
And you know, I've worked at DC United as assistant coach to Ray Hudson. I've been in their academy. I've worked with their under 23 team. It's an organization that is near and dear to me. And I think that our relationship with them is only going to continue to grow. We share Audi Field. Next year, we're going to move into the same training premises, which is a state-of-the-art new training facility that both football clubs have been, you know, desperate for. So I think the collaboration and relationship with a MLS club from our perspective will continue to grow. And I think there is definitely a benefit of having a shared market. Portland have proven it. I don't know, I can't speak to the situation in Chicago with Rory Dames, but you know, Rory is a great coach and runs a good football club. I don't know what the relationship is with Chicago. I can only tell you from speaking to people about Orlando and Houston that, they're not as two good teams, but not as successful from a numbers game as perhaps they'd like to be. So, you know, it's different in different markets. But I think that can you coexist, or can you, you know, play a women's team and a men's team under one banner? Absolutely. I don't see why not. There should be, you know, a crossover. Certainly spectators who support the football club, you know, irrespective of the gender, should be able to attend matches on both sides and enjoy both.
Yeah. And that was my kind of my follow-up. And I know you said you can really only speak to your market, and I totally understand that. I want to know if maybe you have a general idea if typically the people that would go to – well, we can use your market, for example. People that might go to your game, are they the same people that are also going to DC United, or are you bringing in kind of two different waves of fans?
Well, you know, I think fans of football are fans of football. You know, yeah. Some people are all, you know, some people are so locked into their thinking that, you know, they don't want to attend women's football. I don't know. You know, I can't speak for that mindset. I think that's crazy because, you know, in our league in particular, we've got some of the best players in the world. Yeah. And if you're looking at, you know, the top 200 female players in the world, the vast majority of them are housed in the NWSL. So, you know, per international player perspective, NWSL's got a higher percentage of top-level players. So if you're a, you know, supporter of an MLS team and you have an NWSL team in your same hometown, you're going and watching a female product that is very, very good, very, very high. Mm. You know, it might be a little bit different, but it's football. It's the same rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same setup. And, you know, fans of football will be able to cross over and enjoy. Portland have done it great. Their market is very, very successful. You know, they've got a spectator base that attends both matches. And I think they might have a model that works financially from a ticketing perspective that you can get to go to both games. And it creates a great club culture. Mm. And I think that's certainly the case. If markets are able to carry that off. And I think New Jersey, New York will be able to do it. And we're hoping to do the same thing as well.
So you mentioned earlier when that draft happens and a lot of very talented young women don't get out there because there's not as many teams and they have to either go play in Europe. The way that was worded is it sounds like to me, who doesn't know, Europe, at least for women, is second option behind NWSL. Is that the way it's kind of pictured?
Yeah, in a lot of markets. But, you know, certain, you know, the WSL in the UK right now with so much strong support from heavy financial men's clubs like Manchester City, Chelsea, West Ham, Liverpool, Everton, you know, Manchester United have all got women's teams in the WSL right now. And if they get their, you know, economic act in order, then they could perhaps be enticing some top players to go and play in the WSL. You know, Spain have tried to do it and France are constantly trying to do it. Our players are constantly hit up by agents to try and go over and play in France on loan. But you know, like the men's league, the La Liga for women has got two top teams and after that drops off the face of the earth. It's the same in France. You know, there's two, three top teams in France and after that, you know, it drops off a cliff. So, you know, in our league, you have nine teams. Every single match, every single game, every single team are highly competitive and chock full of top players. So if you really want to be a top player and a play in the best league, women's league in the world, it's the NWSL right now. And there are teams like Olympique Lyon and PSG and Bordeaux, perhaps in France, that are not bad. And three or four teams in the UK that are very, very good. And one or two in Spain that are okay. There's a couple of German sides that are good. But in general, top players in the world are all playing in the NWSL.
For young women listening and really want to make this their life in the future, what is you as a head coach of one of the teams suggest as some of the best ways that they can get involved or at least get prepared early on?
You know, we just picked up two, three players that came back from Europe. So, you know, everybody in this league, nobody gets it right all the time with draft picks. You know, you have to do your research on the front end. Every college coach will call you. You know, people are constantly pushing players down your throat in this league. From the college rank, and you know those who come from renowned programs generally when they show up in our league are really good because they come from good places. But you know there are players who can play professionally that don't get a chance, and we picked up a couple of players who you know didn't make the NWSL draft, went off drafted, went overseas, you know managed to play and became a little bit more mature, a little bit more rounded because you know if you're playing in Scandinavia in one of these countries, it's a still a bit of a tougher putt, and you know have a different cultural experience and to more community element to their games and their teams. So I think players who go over there and succeed, you know, come back here a little bit more rounded, a little bit more capable, and understanding and appreciative of what the NWSL can offer them. But we picked up two players who we felt you know, I'd really benefit from being overseas. So I would say for young kids, if you you don't make it coming out of college in the NWSL draft, maybe because you're not as heralded, maybe because people haven't seen enough of you or are not willing to take a risk on you, then going overseas to Scandinavia or to Iceland or, you know, to places to play to try and become, you know, you prove to people that you're actually a soccer junkie, that you love this game, because the economic reward is not fantastic. We simply do not pay these female players, these top female players, enough money. Our league does not do it. We need to raise the league minimum and maximum. We need to provide an opportunity for these players to make a really good quality living playing a professional sport and expand so that we can get more women in the game. And if they can't get into the professional game in the United States, then they should go and try and play overseas with a view to perhaps returning here and playing when they've, you know, their skills have become better players overseas.
I love the specifics of giving them examples of where they can go play and just reminding them that show everybody that you love it, and then it'll work itself out. I love that. That's so helpful. Coach, when one thing that came up, though, when you said that is raising the minimum, the maximum, and that's something I always hear, and this is something I don't know enough about. And so one thing I hear as a response that I haven't heard a response back to is, well, the money's lower because it's not bringing in as much. I have no idea if that's accurate. I have no idea if that's true. But I wanted to see what you think. Is there any sort of truth to that?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, it's an economic model, right? You know, you can only pay out as much as you bring in. And, you know, we have a co-owner in Bill Lynch who, you know, used a lot of his own personal money, personal wealth, to keep this team alive in the first 5-6 years of operation. We've got a new ownership group in now, and Steve Baldwin has been, you know, a high flyer in that regard. And his mission, singular mission, has been to make sure that our players and players within this league get paid the money that they deserve. And I think our new commissioner, Lisa Bird, is very progressive, and I think along those lines as well. And if we can't get the money in through gate receipts or TV deals or other typical avenues that you know, manifests itself in players' wages, then we have to go for sponsorship deals. We have to find people who are willing to sponsor, put sponsorship money into this league so that there is that trickle-down effect and it gets into players' salaries. And now we keep the top players. We lost Sam Kerr last year to Chelsea because they offered an incredible amount of money, and we can't afford to be losing top players like that from our league because they're getting cherry-picked by these teams who know that we've got some limitations in what we can pay players and how difficult it is to go outside of that capacity and pay them as much money as they deserve. So, yeah, I think ownership and league management and league leadership have to be, you know, very open in their thinking and very broad-minded in how we can make this a more economically viable proposition for female players.
So when you say getting paid more, we're talking relatively to other female leagues around the world that are starting to snipe off some of the top players in the NWSL.
Yeah, you know, if PSG come in and say, we want to pay, you know, the number one draft pick, you know, 10 times more than you can pay at the league max right now, then that, you know, number one draft pick's going to go play in Europe. You know, I've been a professional footballer, and it's a very short-lived career. You have to make as much money as you possibly can. So I don't consider it mercenary that players are going chasing a bigger contract. That's typical. It happens everywhere in every sport all around the world. So we just have to make sure that we have a seat at the table, that we're making sure, you know, our players in this country are not going somewhere else. And the one thing that we have currently over these players is they all want to play in a national team. They all want to get an allocation contract. They all want to be in Vlatko's mind and eye, and going and playing overseas doesn't quite do that because, you know, you're out of sight, out of mind. And, you know, right now, in order to be a player that's on an allocation contract, you have to play in our league. And that's what keeps the majority of our domestic talent at home. Sam Kerr's an Australian international. She can go play where she wants. She doesn't need to be seen by Vlatko Andonovski.
So we'll end, kind of wrap it up in this area when we're talking about this pay and relative here versus leagues in Europe. So are we... When we're talking about paying more, are we not necessarily comparing the amount that a professional would get in the MLS versus NWSL, but it's more of a comparative between NWSL and the European leagues? Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't think European leagues have a league max. If they do, I'm not aware of it. I don't think they've got a, you know, they can more or less pay like Real Madrid, the Galacticos can go and, if they've got money, they're going to pay for whatever the hell they want.
So when we're
but I see in the NWSL, we got a restriction.
Yeah. So when I hear the argument about raising minimums and maximums, I think a lot of people throw in MLS, but I think it sounds like we're actually talking about, at least in some regards, just trying to keep up with some of the European leagues. And it sounds like that's correct.
Yeah. We can't afford to have our players, you know, going overseas to play in these leagues where they're throwing more money at them. And again, it's not what we want to have happen. We need to be competitive.
Coach, anything any of these people or young women players, fans listening that you think they need to know about either DC coming up here or the NWSL coming up?
No, I'd like them to watch. Like, you know, there are players who are playing in our league who are a very short step away from where they are right now. They've been in their shoes. They've lived the dream. They've worked extremely hard. In professional football, there's you know, a lot of luck. A lot of things have to align to get you into this league and get you into a place where you're playing and getting paid to play, which is every young player's dream. But they should be watching these games and looking at the level and looking at the stand and looking at, you know, helping this game grow. I tell Rose Lavelle, Andy Sullivan, these players all the time, you are currently the guardians of this game for the next breed. You need to be making sure that it's something that you save for them, you keep alive for them, and you make sure that when their time comes, they're able to play in the same place as you're playing right now.
Coach, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate the interview.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. This episode is also brought to you by our friends over at Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Lewisville, Texas, brought to you by Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to bring success to the lives of young men in ways in which they may have not reached that success otherwise. One of the ways in which they do this is through their professional basketball team, the Lewisville Yellow Jackets, who play in TBL or the Basketball League. Make sure you go check out Creating Young Minds on all major platforms, including Facebook and LinkedIn. I encourage you to dive more into the mission of Creating Young Minds as they strive to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. Thank you. And that was our interview with Richie Burke. First off, if you're interested in any more episodes directly relating to soccer, I have a few you can look up. Episode 5, way back in the day, we have Dini Watara of, he played professional soccer in Africa and the Philippines. That's episode 5. Then jumping up ahead a little bit, we go to episode 22. We have Claire Winter, who played soccer in Puerto Rico, and we do talk a little NWSL as well as college soccer, but mostly we talk about her experiences in Puerto Rico playing professional soccer. Then jumping forward again to episode 45, we had Aaron Williams and Ante Bakmaz, both Australian athletes who are playing professional soccer in Indonesia as of late. And that brings us to today's episode. So not as many in soccer. If you think that's a travesty and we need more episodes on soccer and you're interested, you can do one of two things or both. Send us a message. You're like, hey, I want more soccer. Great. We can take care of that. Also, listen to the episode and share it, because when we look at episode listens, the more tells us that maybe that content was more interesting to the broad listener. So share it and get the numbers up, as well as send us a message and we can do that. But otherwise, those are the episodes you can check out for past episodes we've done on soccer. Now, specifically in the interview with Richie, it was a great discussion. One of the things I love and I wanted to point out for just a second was that pay discussion we had. I never, in the beginning, I said it was a new way for me to look at the pay discussion. We've heard it before, but to actually sit down and kind of talk about it sometimes gives you an opportunity to look at it at a different angle. And that was exactly what happened. I had never considered the fact that some of this push for more money is a different fight than you may have thought. It's, in some regards, it's actually a battle against some of those leagues overseas, women's leagues overseas, that are taking top athletes from the NWSL over there. And so that's an argument or a discussion I've never considered, I've never heard before, possibly because I'm not listening hard enough. That could be, but I'm just glad I got to hear about it today and how I get to ponder that. I hope you do too, and we get to keep that in our head as we dissect the discussion of pay and things like that, and adding different angles to the conversation, which is all really important to help fully understand that. The other big topic that I enjoyed and just wanted to touch on for a second was our conversation of split markets. I think a lot goes into that. I had time to quick think about it before I recorded this outro here. And I think there's some very important distinctions that need to be made when you're looking at the division of a market, air quotes, between different teams. One is the sport. So let me give you an example. TBL, the basketball league, you've heard episodes with them before. We've done several. They have an example of a split market, kind of. Now, first of all, Dallas is huge. The Dallas-Fort Worth area is massive, but they do have two teams in Dallas. They have the Dallas Skyline and the Louisville Yellow Jackets. Technically, you could consider that a split market, and yet those two teams seem to be doing just fine. And not only are they the same sport, but they're in the same league, which begs the question, does it depend on the sport when you're looking at a split market? Like, could a city take two hockey teams? I don't know. And maybe for some of you, like, no, of course not. That's ridiculous. I don't know. I guess I'm just thinking out loud, which is the negative of you going this far in the podcast episode. This is what you get. But there's difference. I think the sport definitely matters. And so splitting a market with soccer is interesting. It's an interesting idea. I really want to hear more about that. I want to hear from the markets that have had a really good success with it. And I also want to hear from the markets that it isn't going so well. And I want to know if that's correlation or causation. Is it because there's two teams in the market, or does it just happen that the market that has two teams also doesn't do so well in one of the two leagues? I want to know if it's because they're splitting the market or if it just happens that way. And you know, even if you're not into soccer, we do have team owners. We have league owners who listen to the show. We want to know what happens in a split market. At least maybe for your sport or your league. What happens in a split market? Is there room for it in your sport? It's an interesting question that I want to continue to dive in. Some will be breaking it down in episodes, and some will just be private phone calls I have with team owners and league owners to try to figure this out, because it's a question and I love answering questions as best I can. So this is something I want to learn more about. If you have any insight, let me know, and if we can make a long discussion out of it, maybe we'll put it in an episode. That being said, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you, Richie, for coming on and talking. I'm excited to see, obviously, all of these leagues get started again, but NWSL was one I really didn't get a whole lot of time to get into before everything hit. So I am excited to watch that. I'm excited for all of these leagues I've been more recently introduced to once everything gets back to normal for sports. I'm really excited. So I hope you are too. I hope, if nothing else, from these 49 different episodes, you've learned a little bit about different sports, different opportunities, different experiences. I love the MLB. I love the NHL, NBA, NFL, and the MLS. But I really love hearing about these other opportunities and these other stories and these other leagues and teams that otherwise we probably wouldn't have heard of. That's always been the mission of Globally Ballin'. Promote leagues, spotlight teams and opportunities, and telling players' stories. I think through the 49 other episodes, and this one included, to make 50, I think we've hit that mission, and we're going to continue in the next 50 episodes. Everybody out there, stay safe, stay healthy. Thank you for your continued support. Thank you so much, and you'll hear from us again next week. Hey everybody, thank you again for getting through another episode. We really appreciate it. I just want to quick redirect you to where you can find us one more time to kind of close out this whole episode. You can find us at facebook.com/globallyballin, Twitter @globallyballin, Instagram @globallyballinofficial. The name was taken. And patreon.com/globallyballin. Again, what you can find there is all of these episodes music-free as well as ad-free. And a bunch of other tiers that offer you a lot of other stuff. There is a ton of content available for you that you are not getting here that's out there on the Patreon page. So if you want to check that out, that would be great. And then, of course, again, if you like the show, we would really appreciate a rating and a review wherever you listen. I know I normally suggest Apple Podcasts, but if there's a way, you know, if you listen to it somewhere else and there's a way to rate it, that would be great as well. But any of that is very, very helpful and very much appreciated. It does take a lot of work putting these things together and editing them up and making it all mesh together and getting our interviews lined up and all this. So it takes a lot, but we really believe in it, and we encourage you, if you believe in it too, doing one of those things to help us out would be fantastic. Otherwise, simply you listening to our episodes coming out is a huge blessing to us. So thank you very much. for supporting the show, and you'll get an episode from us here in the coming days.